This is case number 73274, Jackie Rosen v. Danny Tarkanian. The record will reflect that we have Mr. Elias representing the appellants, Mr. Randazzo representing the respondent. Before we proceed, on the record, Justices Silver and Cage have recused themselves, so they will not be participating in this case. Justice Stiglitz is not here today, but she's watching this case live on the Internet. She unfortunately had to be out of town today for something, but she'll be back tomorrow, and so we'll have a chance to hear from her. So it'll be the five members of this court. Just so you know, in the event there's not a vote of four, we need at least four to render a decision. So if the five can't come to four, we'll have to appoint additional justices, either senior justices or district judges. So, well, that's just the way it works here. So we'll see what we can come up with after today's arguments then. So with that being said, Mr. Elias, you may proceed and argue. And do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal? Okay. And I know Mr. Tarkanian's here in person, too. I note that on the record then. Okay. 5 minutes for rebuttal. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Mark Elias, and I represent Jackie Rosen and her campaign in this matter. In all speech cases, especially in anti-SLAPP cases involving defamation, context is key. The three statements at issue in this case were made by a candidate and her campaign in a 30-second political television commercial during the closing days of a grueling and hard-fought political campaign. In that campaign, accusations and allegations flew in both directions on a variety of subjects. The danger of permitting the district court's decision to stand in this case cannot be overstated. When confronted with similar statements made by earlier campaign rivals, Mr. Tarkanian, in his trial court brief, acknowledged that the statements, quote, do in fact state the truth. And indeed, the three statements at issue here are materially indistinguishable from the statements that he acknowledged do in fact state the truth.
These statements weren't exactly the same as the ones over in the Miller case. These go back to that Schaefer case. More similar to that than they are to the Miller statements, correct?
No, that's not correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you for...
Quite the opposite. The Miller statements...
Just tell me why then.
So if you look at the record, the Miller statements said Tarkanian served as the resident agent and attorney for many fraudulent telemarketing organizations who built senior citizens out of millions of dollars.
But didn't yours become a little more specific, saying, okay, set up 13 fraudulent corporations?
So the set up 13 fake charities, which is the statement,
correct,
was on all fours with the Horsford statement that was also deemed to be, in fact, state truth. Right. Also truthful in their pleading were not just the Miller statement, but the Horsford statements. And that statement said, Tarkanian has been involved as a businessman and lawyer with at least 13 fraudulent charities. So the statements here are quite similar. And in the context of anti-SLAPP and a political campaign, the kind of parsing necessary that the district court engaged in is highly inappropriate. To pull apart the differences between set up 13 fake charities and involved with at least 13 fraudulent charities is slicing it way, way too thin. If you look at the earlier case, the one that you referenced that they rely on, let's put that in context. First of all, that involved a variety of statements, some of which do not mirror anything in this case, whether he had was under grand jury investigation, whether he was turn state's evidence against other fraudsters that he had cooperated with. We don't know what the jury found relevant to its determination of defamation in that case. It may very well have been the statements involving turn state's evidence. It may very well have been the statements involving been under grand jury investigation. We simply don't know. What we know is that after verdict, but before judgment was entered, the case settled. So we actually don't have a record upon which to base whether there was or was not a finding by a jury or a conclusion by a jury of one statement or another being the reason for their verdict. And then we have a settlement. And so I think it is very difficult in the area of First Amendment free speech and anti-SLAPP to say that Ms. Rosen and her campaign should have ignored the statements that had been made in the newspaper, the statements made by an assistant U.S. attorney, statements made by people convicted as part of some of these fraud statements, and instead should have looked at the trial transcripts for a trial that had taken place at Alton Lisa. And so I think that is an unreasonable position that is advanced, but I understand why it's advanced, because having acknowledged that the Miller statement and the Horstman statements were true, they are left with very little left to argue was actually false. So where do they go from there?
How do you deal with the cease and desist letter?
The cease and desist letter actually doesn't identify any of these three statements. The cease and desist letter simply says...
Doesn't it make it obvious?
No. The cease and desist letter basically says the entire area of discussion is off limits. The cease and desist letter does not speak with any specificity as to which statements are allegedly defamatory, just that the subject matter of the end.
But knowing that some of those statements were in fact found to be defamatory by a jury, doesn't that give you a clue as to some of those statements?
Well, again, I think the question here is whether or not the statements were true, right? We don't get, if the statements were true, then Mr. Tarkanian simply doesn't get out of the box with respect to anti-SLAPP.
So each and every aspect of that statement needs to be true.
No. If you look at, so the anti-SLAPP statute, this is very important, Your Honor. The anti-SLAPP statute in Nevada has undergone multiple revisions, which is also something that's different from Schneider. There was no anti-SLAPP statute when the Schneider case went to trial. And in fact, under the current statute, it probably wouldn't have gone to trial. Because it probably would have been thrown out on anti-SLAPP grounds. But that's speculation. But what we know is that the Nevada legislature has on multiple occasions amended its anti-SLAPP statute to make it more and more protective of free speech and speech on issues of importance in the state, including political campaigns. And in doing that, it has instructed this court to continue its practice of relying on California judicial decisions involving their anti-SLAPP statute. And if you look at those decisions, which go unaddressed in Appley's brief, you see case after case where California has said over and over again that statements made in a political campaign are protected under the anti-SLAPP statute. So you have Reed versus Gallagher, where a 30-second ad in the weeks leading up to a campaign included several statements that the losing candidates considered defamatory. The court granted the anti-SLAPP. If you look at some of the earlier cases, like Bielenson, where there was a mailer, the court said that implied defamation, the theory of implied defamation, didn't apply in the campaign context. And that is the only theory of falsity advanced in this court today. The appellee's brief does not argue that these statements were literally false. They say they were false by implication. I have a shocking admission to the court today. Political ads don't always tell the whole story. 30-second political ads don't give the full context. Indeed, sometimes they are slanted. Sometimes they're hyperbolic. In fact, they are almost always slanted and hyperbolic. And what the courts have said over and over again is that the remedy for Mr. Tarkanian and others is to combat it with more speech. As Justice Roberts said not that long ago in an admonition to courts, that the tie is to go to the speaker, not to the censor. That where you have speech in a political context, it deserves the widest berth. And that's the precedent of the California appellate courts that this court has turned to before and which the legislature in its most recent iteration of its statute has pointed you to. If you turn specifically...
Sorry.
a clearly false statement made in a political campaign is protected under our anti-SLAPP statute? Where do you get that conclusion from the language of our statute?
I'm not saying that a completely false statement is. What I'm saying is that a statement that is acknowledged to be substantially similar to other statements that are deemed true, and a statement which counsel in this court is not arguing is untrue. He is arguing that it is untrue by implication. In other words, when you take the context of it, the gist and the sting of it is untrue, even if the words of it may be true. That, I am saying, has no place in the jurisprudence of this court, and in fact has been rejected in the jurisprudence of California under its anti-SLAPP statute quite explicitly. If you look at the language in Reed versus Gallagher, for example, the court in California said, quote, the overwhelming weight of authority is that campaign rhetoric is protected speech, and as such, recovery by a candidate is highly unusual. We perceive no reason to countermand the overwhelming weight of authority. If you look at the earlier cases in California, Bellinson, the court said that once an individual decides to enter the political wars, he subjects himself to our history of bare-knuckled political brawls. Hyperbole, distortion, invective, and tirades are as much a part of politics as kissing babies and distributing bumper stickers and potholders. Politics ain't beanbag, and Mr. Tartanian was no babe in the woods when he entered the arena of politics. He is a candidate. He has been a candidate in cycle after cycle. This issue that he is suing about today has come up in campaign after campaign after campaign, and in three of those campaigns involving Mr. Horsford and Mr. Miller, similar statements were made, and his counsel acknowledged before the trial court that those statements were true. And if those statements were true, then the statements here today are true. And in fact, if you look at the broader record, even beyond that admission, there is nothing in those statements that is untrue. Objectively, if you look at the full record and look at what the U.S. Attorney's Office has said, look at the sentencing memorandum filed by the 18-year-old who was put up by Mr. Tartanian as a straw man who, when he took the fall, got a downward departure because he said, it wasn't me, I was set up. Look at the newspaper article after newspaper article after newspaper article that refers to Mr. Tartanian and how they describe this. There is nothing about these allegations that is untrue. They are simply painful truths that Mr. Tartanian doesn't want to acknowledge. So instead, he has created an alternative universe in which creating a corporation is minimal legal work, and serving as a registered agent absolves him of any responsibility for what that corporation then does. That may be his position, and he was free, as he did in the campaigns, to say that publicly. He was free in the campaigns to say that that was the truth. He was free in the campaign to say that my client wasn't telling the truth. He was free in the campaign to pay to put up a website saying that my client was lying. What he's not free to do is to hijack the judicial system and turn it into a weapon to suppress political speech. If this court wades into this waters, every campaign ad will be before this court. Everyone. Every candidate will have a choice to make. They are either going to put on the armor and bear the expense of litigating every claim made in every political campaign ad, or they're going to shirk, take five steps back from the line, and not engage in constitutionally protected speech. Both of those are bad. This court should not want to find itself entangled in parsing words. Geez, was it okay to say, built seniors out of millions of dollars? Yeah, that was okay. But was it okay to say seniors lost millions of dollars from scams? No, that's not okay.
Mr. Elias, you're kind of into your rebuttal time.
Oh, I apologize.
You want to reserve the rest of
the time? I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Randazzo.
Thank you, Your Honors. It's a privilege to be here arguing on behalf of Mr. Tartanian, and may it please the court. I believe that my friend may not have a complete grasp of the changes that the Nevada anti-SLAPP law has undergone. It was not ever intended to, nor did it, change the substantive law of defamation in this state. I find it inaccurate when we talk about the Schneider case that it might have ended differently. It would not have. The anti-SLAPP law is here to test these kind of cases at the beginning. There was a plague, I believe, in this state of these kind of cases where they were over freedom of expression. There was no chance of prevailing, not even this prima facie chance of prevailing. But the process was the punishment. And you wouldn't get to that point until after discovery, until after the defendant had been beaten down. And at that point, then the court might rule in favor of the defendant. But at that point, the defendant was already financially defeated. That's what the anti-SLAPP law is here for. It didn't say that there's a lower standard for defamation or a higher one. But that's what we changed in 2013. We actually did raise the standard for an anti-SLAPP motion to clear and convincing evidence. But in 2015, that was brought down to a prima facie case. So in this case, we are looking at, I think what he said, there were two things he said that I agree with. I think we just disagree on the application of it. First, when it comes to analyzing defamatory statements, we look at the gist or the sting of it. That's what we look at. That's what the lower court looks at. That's what the jury looks at. We don't simply decide if we have, now I'm not conceding that we have technically true statements here either, but if we do, we still look at the overall context. Context is key. Quite similar statements is what he said, but quite similar are not the same. So in the Schneider case, filed in 2004, there was a jury verdict in Mr. Tarkanian's favor. And I think that my friend may have made an error when he says that there's nothing in the record that tells us what the jury actually said or saw. Because if we look at the index at AA 196 to 202, we have precisely that in exacting detail. However, we don't need to get to that. Because really what we have to do is look at how the anti-SLAPP law functions. Step one is, do these statements apply? Now, there's one argument I'm not going to make, and that is that they would not be within the purview of the anti-SLAPP statute. Of course they are. This was political speech. Let's move on to the next prong, next part of prong one. Were they true? We say they were not. The lower court found that they were not. Even the articles that Ms. Rosen's campaign purported to quote said that they were not. So these are not true statements. Now, the other question is, did she have knowledge of that falsity? I don't know how you can have a campaign ad where what you're doing is quoting a Las Vegas Review-Journal article, selectively quoting it, taking quotes out of context in order to create a defamatory meaning, where the actual facts are laid out in that article. It's very rare that we have an anti-SLAPP case or a defamation case where we can look and say exactly what was the speaker thinking. What information did the speaker have?
Can you help us with what opposing counsel had indicated earlier with the Horsford and Miller statements that he essentially said they were true?
I can twice help you with that.
Okay.
One is that there is nothing in the record to show that these were relied on in making these statements. Therefore, they're irrelevant. However, also, my client disputes that they are true. What my client said is that he admitted, yes, that he worked as an attorney for these companies. That's very different than them saying that these statements in the Horsford case are true entirely, in context, and then that those statements translate over to her statements in this ad. We need to look just at those statements, Your Honor. Does that answer your question sufficiently?
Kind of.
So if we move on to what the advertisements said, they said Danny Tarkanian set up 13 fake charities. Now, think about the difference in that. If there's an election campaign, or in any statement, it doesn't matter if it's an election campaign or not, no matter how well protected it is. If we say you set up 13 LLCs, I think everybody in this room knows the difference between that and you set up 13 fake charities. You have fronts, set up fronts for telemarketing schemes. Again, perhaps that is how these corporations were eventually used. But there is quite an industry in this state of setting up corporations, serving as registered agents. I mean, every company from LegalZoom to Nevada corporate headquarters that does that here, would they then be properly said, anytime one of those LLCs commits tax evasion, does any other kind of untoward activity, would they be properly and truthfully described as engaging in that activity? I don't think that that would be truthful. Now, if that's not truthful, it doesn't fit prong one of the anti-SLAPP statute. So just as Judge Weiss said, and if you look at the transcript, Judge Weiss really went through exactly how you're supposed to do this. His ruling was based on the fact that these statements are capable of a defamatory meaning. As a matter of law, he could not find that that's not the case. And therefore, this is not the kind of case that's supposed to evaporate at the anti-SLAPP stage.
So by the way that you're characterizing this, if you were to put out a statement that he had organized five corporations that were determined to be fraudulent, that's by implication, and how would you address that if the statement were true?
So he said he organized these five.
To the sting of this. Well, that has a sting to it. So, but it's true, if it were true.
The way I would look at it is in context, Your Honor. Because if you're talking about, in this hypothetical case, if it's a billboard with white background and black lettering that just says these words, that's one thing. It's another thing if you look at the context of this very campaign. In this very campaign, you have this statement coming up, and it's supposedly attributed to the Las Vegas Review-Journal, supposedly attributed to the Las Vegas Sun, not really accurately quoting what is in those articles at all, and then with the backdrop of senior citizens on the phone asking these questions. So I appreciate the hypothetical, but I can't separate that from the greater context. In the context of these particular statements and these particular ads, I don't think it's unreasonable. In fact, I think it's very clear that a reasonable jury could find that these are defamatory. A reasonable jury found identical statements to be defamatory. A reasonable judge in Las Vegas found them to be capable of a defamatory meaning. And I don't think that we deprive my client of the ability to present these to that jury. And if this jury finds differently than the Schneider case, I admit it's not res judicata, but it certainly shows that he has a prima facie case sufficient to get past the anti-SLAPP statute.
Do you agree that our review is de novo on prong two, given the change in standard?
Wholeheartedly, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Now, with respect to my friend's argument that in a political campaign, you cannot have defamation by implication. Well, that's simply, if that is the law of California, remember the way that our anti-SLAPP statute calls upon us to look at California jurisprudence is not to look at California jurisprudence for the substantive law of defamation. I dispute that that's how California law looks at it, but this court is certainly not asked to look at California's substantive defamation law, but to look at how the California court has interpreted its anti-SLAPP law. The anti-SLAPP law is only substantive in that it provides an immunity from suit in an unsupportable case that can't get past its standard, and it provides a substantive right to the recovery of attorney's fees. Other than that, it is merely procedural. And our legislature, when it put that factor in, and frankly this court in prior decisions has said, we will look to California because it has a wealth of interpretive law when it comes to anti-SLAPP, does not say that we simply adopt something. If the California Supreme Court were to simply rule that a certain category of speech could no longer be defamatory, for example, recently the New York's highest court said that falsely accusing somebody of having a different sexual orientation than they have is no longer defamatory. Well, If this court were to decide that, frankly, I would agree with that. But if California were to decide that, that would not remove your ability to independently state under Nevada law we feel the same way, or under Nevada law we feel differently. So I want us to stay on point when it comes to procedural versus substantive rights created by this statute.
What do you say about a key component of prong one, that the statements published by Rosen have to be demonstrated to have been made in good faith, and that they were not?
Well,
I get your argument earlier that she should not be permitted to rely upon statements made in the Horsford and Miller campaigns if she didn't rely on those, but they were part of the public record. In what way did Rosen fail to demonstrate that the statements made in this campaign were not based on good faith?
Well, for starters, and very simply, Your Honor, we have no evidence in the record of that. She certainly, when you file an anti-SLAPP motion, it is really normal to put in a declaration from the defendant stating what they thought and what they were doing. They chose not to do that. Now, I read the transcript below where their argument was they didn't do that because an anti-SLAPP motion is supposed to terminate the proceedings early without discovery. That's just not true under the 2015 version of the statute. Under the 2015 version of the statute, if he files an anti-SLAPP motion, they feel that they need more discovery. I'm sorry, the other way around. Usually I'm on the other side of these cases. But if there's an anti-SLAPP motion filed, and the non-moving party believes that they need discovery, they file a motion. They file a separate motion saying, we need this specific targeted discovery in order to defeat it. So when I looked at that argument, and I see that
there is that issue is because sometimes that discovery will generate information that wasn't previously known by the speaker, but should then be relied on, I think, in expressing good faith, don't you think?
Well, if the speaker
otherwise, what's the point of the discovery?
Well, if the speaker is finding more information after the fact, I don't think that they can cook up good faith after the fact. And in this situation, had Mr. Tarkanian asked for discovery at that point, I don't think it would have changed anything. In fact, I think the proper decision by Judge Weiss would have been to say, well, we understand that you may feel that you need more discovery, but I'm not going to grant it to you because I can decide this motion on the basis of the record before me. Why give discovery to the non-moving party when you don't need it one way or the other? That really is a valve that should go both ways. Additionally, I think your question
in this case is that the moving party on the anti-SLAPP motion failed to demonstrate good faith because there was no declaration of good faith.
That's at least one way
they could have. At least the good faith basis for the statements.
That is one way they could have done it. Now, I'm not saying that that declaration would have said something that supported that. They could have tried that. Now, of course, that would have subjected the plaintiff to, I mean, I certainly would have, if I were on the other side of that, said I want to test this person's testimony and take discovery. I think that when this case progresses to discovery, from what we're seeing here, I don't know how they're going to say that they ever had any good faith sufficient to prevail in this case. Because if you look at the actual article, we come back to the article. And Your Honor, your question you were asking, I don't want to get too far from this. You said, didn't the public record have those statements in it? Well, but the public record also had these jury verdicts. The public record also had the fact that he had prevailed on the same statements. And we don't even need to go to say what part of the public record did she look at. Let's just look at her ad purporting to quote from the Las Vegas Review-Journal article, taking statements out of context in that to create a defamatory meaning, and then right there in the same article stating these same statements were part of a jury verdict for defamation verdict, which he won. So if a defamation case, when I think of what the anti-SLAPP statute should stop, the one thing I can say it could not stop is bringing a lawsuit over the same statements that you've already won a defamation case over. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Randazza. Mr. Elias, you can come on back for your remaining time. I had one question before we start your clock to think about is going back to this good faith issue raised by Justice Hardesty as the first prong of our test under Nevada law and our anti-SLAPP statute. Without a declaration or affidavit in support of your motion, how can we make that presumption on good faith? You know, what is it that we rely upon to support your claim that there is good faith?
I'm glad you asked that question because it was one of the 3 points I was going to make, so I'm glad also to have saved some of my time on that. The answer is that good faith communication is the term of art in the statute. That is defined as a statement that is, quote, truthful or made without knowledge of falsehood. So good faith, we're conflating, if it's truthful, it is good faith. So if it's truthful, you don't need an affidavit. It's just truthful. So whether she, in good faith, said something truthful, or in bad faith, said something untruthful that was truthful, or in no opinion of good faith or bad faith, just said something that was truthful, the anti-SLAPP statute treats that as a, quote, good faith communication. I wanted to point the court to two things in my remaining time. The first is the other side has omitted any direct dealing with the limited authority that this court does have on this question. So I understand opposing counsel isn't enthralled by the idea of looking at substantive law in California for obvious reasons. But if you look at this court's decision in Wellman versus Fox, that case is from this court dealing with election speech. And in that case, the court held that certain secondary statements in the Fox flyer suggest exaggeration or overbroad generalization. That would include reference to Wellman's as the Dalton Gang and the references to Vardaman as being an intimate of this group. However, such exaggerated statements are permissible in contexts in which the statements would be interpreted by a reasonable person as mere rhetorical hyperbole. We conclude that in the context of a union election, Fox's exaggerations and overbroad generalizations were not libelous. This court found that some of the quote-unquote extraneous statements, which were, again, the sort of sauce that made the steak sizzle, that in the context of a union election would not lead to something being considered actionable.
Thank you. I had one more question. Maybe both counsel can comment before we proceed. Just as a disclosure, I live in Congressional District 3 in Las Vegas, so I recall the 2016 campaign, and my recollection was that Mr. Tarkanian won the Republican primary, and his opponent in the Republican primary made allegations. So I can't remember the specifics, but I think it was some of these same allegations. Was that part of the record at all in this case?
So there have been a number of candidates who have made similar allegations against
them. But it wasn't part of this whole thing with Judge Weiss.
The record that we have cited to is the reason why we've limited to those three elections is because in his brief, he quoted the three statements made by Miller and Horsford, and then said that though the statements put a distasteful slant on the association, they do in fact state the truth. So, that's in the record.
That's fine. I just wanted to know if that was part of it. Mr. Rendez, if you want to comment on that too. Thank you. Just so I understand. Would you come up here, please, so we can get it under, we record all this arguments are streamed live, so we need to get the audio part of it.
The only statements that Mr. Tarkanian has admitted were true was that he did this limited degree of legal work. And even to the extent that those statements matter, I think they've raised the argument that, well, why didn't you sue them? Well, first, he's not under any obligation to sue every single possible defamation defendant. But the context of these statements was demonstrably different. And I think we've shown that in our briefing, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your excellent arguments and briefs. Thank you, counsel, Mr. Kringen, all of you for coming here today. The case will be under submission.